for today is our second full day of session. And the sun's out. We might even sit down by the river this afternoon if the weather holds. And, you know, with the trajectory of session after about the second day, where our minds are calming down like a pool of a glass full of muddy water that's been swirled around, and may not feel like that, but that's kind of what's happening. And I say this every session, but the just the very container and the stillness and the change of routine has an alchemical effect, or an effect that is something we can't really negotiate our way out of, just because it's such a shift from away from our normal lives. And so even if you don't do anything, then something's happening. And because it is a very unusual thing to be doing. And then we combine that with quiet sitting and attention to this moment, and things happen. Sometimes what emerges is that great struggles emerge that sometimes describe it as the monkey mind or the small mind does not want to conform to this new way of being, and lots of thoughts come up, and you know, especially I think it's quite interesting, because we don't normally have a chance to check things out with other people, get perspective, you know, this whole thing about perspective. And that's why we, you know, discourage reading and writing during session, because it's like we try and get perspective by and talking with other people, with other ideas, with the whole nature of perspective is to line up your current thoughts and ideas with someone else's thoughts and ideas and see whether they match. And it's just like so non-session, you know. Where our experience really here is to line up our direct experience with our direct experience. And and that's a very difficult thing to encounter. So if you're struggling, you're not alone. And sounds like a David Bowie song. Yeah. Which one's that from? And I'm not alone. You know, go around in your heads the next time. What's that one from? About 5 years. Anyway. St. Bowie is in the Two-Seat of Heaven. So just a very recap of yesterday, the sweeping the ground, and I realize that in terms of koans, had a few conversations with people about koans, and especially those who don't do koans. Koans can seem a little loopy. And so I thought I'd talk just a little bit about the role of koans in our tradition and practice. So we take the koan yesterday of Ungan sweeping the ground, I guess koans were really introduced as, they all come from live experiences, so things that were happening and they were picked up and compiled into a various books or formal documents, and then were used in various schools, both the Rinzai and the Soto school, as teaching methods. And there are some criticisms, I guess, levelled at koan traditions, in that they can become a bit formulaic. In other words, that the there's a koan and there's an answer, and then even in some of the in the Soto school, that this, like when you do Dharma combat, that the answers to and Dharma combat in our tradition is where when someone passes into a senior student or other some rite of passage, and they get presented with it with a column they work on over, say, a 3-month training period, and at the end of that period there's quite an elaborate ceremony, an empowerment ceremony, and then the Sangha has an opportunity to test that person's understanding of the koan, and the verse is read out and the koan is read out, and then if you draw a name out of a hat, you get to ask a question. It can be as tricky as you like. So, but I guess the fact save face and some of the more formulaic tradition, then those answers are all, the questions are prescriptive and the answers are prescriptive, so it's kind of full formulaic. But now tradition, it's kind of free for all, so generally it's more junior students asking the senior student ones, so rather they don't embarrass the person who's coming up. But you know, koans as a method are really a method of shining a light on your understanding, and the koans, you say, are always presenting reality, always presenting this direct experience. And because this direct experience comes in Joshu. What's the guy at Mount Baldy? Mount Baldy, Rinzai teacher. Suzaki Roshi, that's it. Joshu Suzaki Roshi. He's got that symbol, which is like a zero on top and an infinity underneath. I kind of like that symbol. It's like into some mathematical symbols. But, you know, the zero just represents, you know, this direct experience. And the infinity is like just that it manifests in infinite number of ways. Kind of a beautiful expression in symbolic form. And so the koans appear in many, many different ways. They're always expressing the same thing. You know, this experience. How is this experience being manifested now and now and now and in this way? And we tend to get a little stuck because we have ideas of what realization looks like. All this kind of stuff. We kind of divide our life out, and yet when we're presented with all kinds of trials and tribulations, and that's the Buddha, or how we want to put it. Of course, it's not the Buddha, because the Buddha looks like this. Well, that can't be the Buddha, and it's because we have ideas about what Buddha is, which is a koan in itself, anyway. But the koans are why we have so many is because there are so many different ways we can get trapped. And I know in the course of my koan studies, some koans would just be like, no problem with that, I see that. But other ones, especially mine were about numbers, I couldn't, you know, I'd always have trouble with koans around numbers because my conceptual framework around numbers is a number equals this equals that equals that. And anything with kind of length, breadth, conceptual form being raised as an engineer, it's kind of like it was challenging for me to kind of drop all my fixed ideas about that particular form. And so koan, the word koan comes from the, literally means a public case. Actually, it literally means a rostrum. And it's got a number of different characters, I think, but that's one of them. So it's and it's a public case as a law, a precedent, that was set up by the ancient teachers and then compiled them into books. And of course there's that risk of combining them into books, as I said, where they kind of become kind of fixed. And so how we use them is where the skill lies. You know, such as, you know, there's the koans that are what we call Dharmakaya koans. The Dharmakaya koans are the initial set of koans which are really looking at that difference that we set up between myself and other things. So, you know, the sound of a single hand, move, oak tree in the garden, sound of the rain. You'll notice them as they come through where they're, they're kind of, they seem to be about external objects. And typically we say, you know, that there's myself here and this is this object or thing happening out here. And the koans work with that and ask us to put ourselves directly into that so-called external. And then to present your understanding of that. Because our minds, in a better for worse, they're split up by the activity of thought, split up this whole universe that we are into all kinds of different things. Which is good, otherwise we wouldn't be here. We've been run over by vehicles and eaten by lions many years ago, so it's certainly got a lot of benefits to it. But it also tends to limit our minds into thinking that the world only exists in that particular way. And so the koans are, they're not illogical sayings. You know, they are, direct expression of compassionate means for us to reflect our own kind of areas that we can get stuck. So, and also, I think, but they're kind of not for everyone in a certain sense. So, the actual form is a teaching, so it's a universal teaching. So they're like all traditions and all Buddhist traditions have teaching stories, and whether they appear as koan forms or stories of current day stories or past stories or future stories, and they've got that kind of teaching and mythical and allegorical element to them. And they highlight, like I said, areas that are where we do get stuck, and areas that we can free ourselves. I mean, the koan yesterday, where Ungana at the end, he holds up his broom and says, what moon is this? And that's to me, that's a really nice kind of koan, in a sense of that question. When we get confused, it's like, it's like Ungan thrusts that broom, or when you're cutting carrots, it's that knife, or when you're sitting here, it's the whatever it is that's up front for you. What moon is this? And then, has there been any other moon? That's the real question. Because all these kind of highfalutin words are all, we talk about there's this great universe and us being all part of it. It's like, there's no way to experience anything beyond what you're experiencing. As my teacher said, it's like, it's like what hinders your seeing? What gets in the way of your seeing? So, nothing. Even a blind person, that is the universe. There's Green Mountains. Dogen Zenji says, Green Mountains walk. Of course they do. When you walk, the whole universe walks along with you. Sounds kind of, pretty intense, but what do you think the universe is? These eyes, these ears, what else could it be? You can't place yourself outside this experience. But we have some belief that there is some, external, there is a, what do you call it, like a, an objective world. We have this belief there is an objective world. No one's ever found it. Yet. We still believe, and so that's where in our practice is about really shining a light on that, those kind of core beliefs. And the other part that we're all koan study, or all the study of our tradition. Is that we get to know the people who have been in our lineage that have brought down the practice in its form today, And it probably looks wildly different than it did, you know, 100 years ago or the time of the Buddha. But in one sense, we get to appreciate the depth of this practice. And it's funny, sometimes in, like I was just kind of looking through, and I bring a box of books along, right, and then I probably read one. I might even read it, I just kind of refer to it. And then I picked up, you know, Moon and a Dewdrop, which is some of the writings of Zen Master Dogen, and realised I haven't read Dogen for, I don't know, about a year or something, or longer, you know, like, and there's all the, there's a beautiful poem in here by a student of, well, he's like a Chinese, actually a Japanese poet, and actually, let's see if I can find it. But anyway, he was reflecting on the that's right, here he is. That's right, Ryokan was a great, you know, poet monk in Japan. And he wrote a poem about reading the record of Eihei Dogen, which is, he says, so he finds it one, in his hut one day. He says, "Now when I take the record of Eihei Dogen and examine it, the tone does not harmonize well with usual beliefs. Nobody has asked whether it is a jewel or a pebble. For 500 years it's been covered in dust, just because no one has had an eye for recognizing Dharma. For whom was all his eloquence expounded? Longing for ancient times and grieving for the present, my heart is exhausted." Actually, it wasn't the one I really wanted to read, but I don't know if you remember. It's like he reads the record of Eihei Dogen, and he cries so much on it that the book gets wet, because he's just so the writing is so beautiful, and he's kind of grieving that this hasn't been brought out. And then he says the old man comes next day and notices this book is wet, and he's embarrassed about it. Older man asks him why the book is wet, and he said, "Oh, the rain last night leaked in and wet the book." So I guess I mentioned that because that's also one of the benefits of studying with its koans. And our tradition is you really get to feel the flavour of these folks in the past who have laboured for us to bring down this tradition. And that koan yesterday, where you've got these two Ungan and Dogo, who are keeping that I guess that tradition alive by testing each other. By not just letting it be their own little treasure, and that gets encapsulated and then brought forward to where we find it today. So it's kind of a great river of beneficence that we're the recipients of. And so I thought I'd read a little bit of Master Dogen, because it's like, you know, you do this practice and suddenly you open up someone else's expressions, and Dogen's incredibly poetic, and so this one comes from a fast school called Actualizing the Fundamental Point, or Genjo Koan. And Dogen has some things that are really difficult to see into, because he has such a brilliant mind, but some that are very accessible, and this is kind of one of them. the firewood becomes ash, and it does not become firewood again. Yet do not suppose that ash is future and firewood past. You should understand that firewood abides in the phenomenal expression of firewood, which fully includes past and future and is independent of past and future. Ash abides in the phenomenal expression of ash, just as it is, which fully includes future and past. Just as firewood does not become firewood again after it is ash, you do not return to birth after death. This being so, it is an established way in Buddha Dharma to deny that birth turns into death. Accordingly, birth is understood as no birth. It is an unshakable teaching in Buddha's discourse that death does not turn into birth. Accordingly, death is understood as no death. Birth is an expression complete this moment. Death is an expression complete this moment. They are like winter and spring. You do not call winter the beginning of spring, nor summer the end of spring. An enlightenment is like the moon reflected on the water. The moon does not get wet, nor is the water broken. Although its light is wide and great, the moon is reflected even in a puddle an inch wide. The whole moon and the entire sky are reflected in dewdrops on the grass, or even in one drop of water. Enlightenment does not divide you, just as the moon does not break the water. You cannot hinder enlightenment, just as a drop of water does not hinder the moon in the sky. The depth of the drop is the height of the moon. Each reflection, however long or short its duration, manifests the vastness of the dewdrop and realizes the limitless of the moonlight in the sky. Isn't that beautiful? So each reflection, however long or short its duration, manifests the vastness of the dewdrop and realizes the limitless of the moonlight in the sky. You know, and Dogen Zenji, while he was quite brilliant, was just like, you know, you and me. And, you know, his parents died when he was quite young, very young, and it's said that when at his mother's funeral, and you saw the incense rising from the incense bowl, you kind of have just that deep feeling of the impermanence of life, and really raised in him the desire to understand, you know, his own suffering. So he went through many kind of journeys, and originally studied on Mount Hiei in outside of Kyoto, and then he couldn't really find any true teachers in Japan, so he headed off to China. And there he met his master, Tendo Nyojo. And so we recite Tendo Nyojo's name in the lineage. Tendo Nyojo Daiyosho, Ehe Dokun Daiyosho. So that's those two there. And then he's in his writings, he's kind of critical of, like, most people. He must have been a hard person to live with, I think. He was those bald-headed fellows who walk around with a glare in their eyes, proclaiming to be teachers, and well, he's quite, eventually he was run out of town in various places and ended up in the mountains and on the Western Sea, and set up Eiheiji, one of the main training temples now in the Soto Zen tradition. And then he wrote, you know, this vast compendium of writings, which has been gathered together, we call it the Shobo Genzo. So it's like, you know, I really recommend, and there are a couple of there's the Moon and a Dewdrop, and then Enlightenment Unfolds, which are two books which have been compiled by, of his writings, by Kazuaki Tanahashi, the Japanese teacher, I think, say, living in America, and so compiled those two books of various texts, because it's quite a, Dodin said he wrote a lot, but these are just some, and some are very, you know, very basic about the rules for Zazen, you know, don't eat onions when you're in the meditation hall, and don't do loud chanting, and circumambulation when others are meditating, and things like that. Some real basic stuff through to you know, the Tenzo Kyokan, which is the guidelines for the cook, and then also for all the other service positions. So it's some beautiful writings, and then some, you know, just real poetic works. So and that first goal I just read there, where you know, each reflection. Each reflection, however long or short its duration, manifests the vastness of the dewdrop and realizes the limitless of the moonlight in the sky. Although its light is wide and great, the moon is reflected even in a puddle an inch wide, even in all us little puddles. But don't think that, you know, there's this enlightenment of this moon is outside ourselves too. And so, you know, when we hear kind of words like that, we kind of think there must be something grand, you know. But each reflection, however long or short its duration, each reflection, this reflection now, it's always about this. This is the teaching of the Buddha. You know, the Buddha, when we say Buddha, we think Buddha lived 2,500 years ago, and we think there is a place existing now that is 2,500 years ago. Conventionally, we kind of think that there is a past, and there's a separate planet where this past is happening now. You know, but this past, present, future is now. As Dogen Genji says, when you wake up, the mountains, the rivers, and the great earth are born, you know, are born with you. When you go to sleep, when you die, they all disappear. This universe arises and walks around with you. Say something else, but it can quite fit in. So, that's my encouragement to, yeah, to us all. Is again, it's about, you know, really keeping it simple. And every dewdrop. In every action that we take, you know, no matter how kind of seemingly mundane it is this manifestation of our, you know, about our life, our direct experience, the Buddha, however we want to put it. You know, and when we come together and say she, we kind of nurture that jewel, and we encourage each other to recognize that experience. It is the only, you know, the only dance there is. And so letting go of kind of thoughts and ideas, letting go of the story, you know, around you know, whatever opinions we have about anything, letting that go. You know, coming back to this eternal spring. Alright. 2 days left. Let's carry on.